is to my right, Dr. Michael Switcher. I did not introduce him earlier because I'm going to introduce him right now. But Dr. Switcher is a public education specialist here in Las Cruces, and he has clients in and around New Mexico as well. He writes a weekly column in the Las Cruces Bulletin. He writes for two blogs. He touched them on New Mexico politics and also 575 magazine. He consults in New Mexico schools for students who have trouble with their reading skills, they have difficulty in math, and sign up. Michael is a direct descendant of a Revolutionary War patriot, so he's a fine candidate for membership in the SAR, and I want you all to lean on him if we're going to drag him in. He owns, in his own words, the best dog in the world, Tarmac. And I would like to welcome Dr. Michael Switcher to the PhD. On my webpage because it's a picture of me and my dog Conrad, and everybody writes me and says, move the dog over a little more. So the role of New Mexico, or New Mexico in the Revolutionary War, is what I'll be speaking about for 20 minutes. I'll take questions afterwards, or if we're in trouble for time, you can follow me around and we can talk about it. New Mexico and the American Revolutionary War, was there a connection? Yes, there is. There is a big connection, but it's not the one I suspect some people think. 70 years after 1776 is when the United States rode into Santa Fe and took over. In those intervening 70 years, that's the role I want to talk about. In 1776, New Mexico was firmly in the grasp of Carlos III, the King of Spain. Then in September 1821, Mexico freed itself from Spain, and we were firmly in the grasp of those guys. Then again, in 1846, we got free. Don Juan de Onate Salazar came by here in 1598, right? And he wrote sometime later on Inscription Rock, I, Don Juan de Onate, paso por aquí, right? Uh-huh. I passed by here. Is there nothing better about our lives to say, I passed by here? Someday they'll say, Michael Switcher, paso por aquí. All of us, you know, it's a great lesson to us. But the lesson I would like to point out is he did it 15 years before Plymouth Rock. Now let's get it into, you know, that's what we're going to do. So in 1776, what was going on here? Did you know that when Kearney rode into Santa Fe, there was a whole bunch of ammunition and explosives that said, Spain, 1776. We were in play. We were in play. Now, our governor then, he was governor from 1767 to 1777, was Don Pedro Fernández de Mendiñueta of the Order of Santiago, Colonel of the Royal Army, Governor and Captain General of the Kingdom of New Mexico. This was called the Kingdom of New Mexico. We don't know much about the 10 years or so that he served, other than he wrote, and it was recorded, Santa Fe settlers are churlish type who are accustomed to live apart from each other as neither fathers nor sons associate with each other. I assume he had teenage sons. So what was it like living in New Mexico, or in fact anywhere else in the world, in 1776. What was it like? Well, simply, there was no freedom. And let me use two words interchangeably. Liberty and freedom. There wasn't any. The problem for people without freedom, this was the thing that we have to recognize. You are the descendants of people who had this problem about freedom. They could not visualize anything else because they did not experience anything else but being dominated by a king, right? Nobody in the world. In 1776, how many free nations were there?
None.
The public schools at times have gotten people to think that the Revolutionary War was because we didn't like having a king. Right? It's revisionist history. We didn't know any other life than to have a king. And you could use king and dictator in the same thing. Benevolent dictator, but dictator. Today, we don't like the idea of a king unless it's Martin Luther, right? Back then, you can't name a country that didn't have a king. Now, if you had a king, operationalize that. That meant that anything you had could be taken by the king at any time for any reason the king wanted to do so. Now, the American Revolution, I don't know if you know this, it started on the morning of October 25th, 1760, at 6:30 in the morning. Did you know that? Anybody know that? Okay, here's how it started. George II, the 77-year-old monarch, got his usual cup of chocolate, took a big drink of it, set the cup down, died. Dead. That's the start of the American Revolution. Because when he died, his grandson, the then Prince of Wales, became George III. King of England and Scotland and all the other stuff, right? In 16 years, George III went from very well loved to all of a sudden something odd happened. People all of a sudden, because of the things he did, got this idea that maybe all men were created equal. And had this idea that maybe they could revolt, that they could have liberty, and in that 16 years, that's how this all started. Now, did you know, or do you care, that in the Royal Archives, they have George III's diary. Did you know that? Yeah, and he kept a day-by-day diary. On the 4th of July, 1776, he wrote, "Nothing of importance happened today." Well, of course, he didn't have CNN or anything, right? But isn't that so ironic that he would write that? The whole world changed at that time. In 1776, without any freedom, without any liberty anywhere in the world, some of the colonists got a glimmer, got a look, got a thought. They just got the first sight that said, you know, I think we could live without the king. I think we could live without the king. People like Thomas Jefferson, Thomas Paine, Benjamin Franklin. They saw there could be actions that would lead to liberty. But what was different? You know, here in New Mexico in 1692, there was some Indians who said, "I have had all I want of the Spanish," and they threw them out for a number of years. But it didn't take. What was it about 1776 that changed that here in New Mexico and everywhere else? Well, our leaders wrote about what they were thinking. So you didn't have to be there to know what they thought. You could read it. You could taste and talk about what they were saying and think about it for yourself. They wrote, "When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of earth, the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them, a decent respect for the opinions of mankind is required that they should declare. So they have to tell all the people in the world what caused them to do this. They said, we hold these truths self-evident, that all men are created equal, they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. Everybody in the world that could think, they all looked at that and went, could that be true? Now, they didn't all do it at the same moment. And then they wrote right after that, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government. Wrote those words. It wasn't just that they did something. They didn't pick up a stone and throw it through a window and say, oh, there, I showed them. They wrote it down. And people all over the world read those words, thought about it. What was the Mexico's role in it? They were held by a tyrant. Carlos III, on the throne of Spain. Well, see, their role was they were the learned. People we're related to, they were the teachers. Right? As the freedom movement was embraced, the rank and file citizens of New Mexico who heard about this probably thought, could that happen here? Well, it didn't happen right away. It didn't happen in Mexico or South America or any of the other places. It didn't happen in England right away. But it got them thinking. Made them look. Made them look. They went, when we think about the year 1776, we realize your ancestors, no, not your ancestors. What do we call them?
Are they ancestors?
Yeah. Oh, good. Your ancestors and mine liberated more than the colonies, didn't they? Their actions in support of the American Revolution were decisive in liberating the rest of the free world over the next 150 years. The final chapter of the American Revolution is it brought freedom even to the English, right? Who did their best to keep us a dominion of King George III. We freed them by our example. Those that we're related to freed those people that would have oppressed them. Wasn't instantaneous. Nothing in my life is instantaneous except stupidity at times. It wasn't instantaneous, but over time, and actually relatively quickly for England. Do you remember Ben Franklin was hammered by the English Parliament one time? And, well, as he walked out, he didn't say anything, but he turned to the Prime Minister and said, I will make your king a little king. All of a sudden, kings became littler and littler. Right? Currently, how many countries are there? 195, right? And there's about 90. Free countries, and about 105 not free countries. Now consider this. When the words of our national anthem were written, how many free countries were there in the world? We got almost 90 now. So, head in the right direction. And of course, there are some people who watch the daily news and say, but we'll get to that. So what I'd like to do is, in my own way, take what are the 8 principles of liberty, of freedom, instead of saying, yes, I want liberty, yes, I want freedom. What are they? What are those 8? Well, number 1. I believe that our freedom hinges on the concept that the people have the right to rule themselves. Saddam Hussein did not believe that. Right? So, we convinced him. We cannot be free If we are some king's subjects in some king's realm, no, we can only be free if we rule ourselves. If a ruler of a country is a dictator, that country is not free. Now, I'm disappointed in our country in the sense that it doesn't want to say to other countries who are being ruled by dictators, hey, well, they really don't want freedom. All right, I'll leave that alone. Number two, freedom can only be sustained when a free people learn from the mistakes of other civilizations and from their own mistakes. If you don't learn from your mistakes, I mean, I say that. History teaches us that no one ever learns.
Yeah, because we forget our history.
Every free nation cannot afford to make the same mistakes as other nations. That's important. Number three, operational. What is being free? Well, being free is the ability to voluntarily make choices for ourselves. This is what your ancestors fought for, was their right to voluntarily make choices. What are those? That we have voluntary associations, that we have voluntary monetary exchanges, and that we have voluntary legal interactions. You notice I used a word there three times?
Voluntary.
When you compel somebody to do something, they are a little less free. But if you are not able to voluntarily do these things, you are not free, nor is this necessarily a free society. These are under the concept of unalienable rights. Only free people have unalienable rights. Life, liberty, and property. Yeah, I know they couldn't say property because of the slave issues, but that's what Thomas Jefferson meant. He didn't really mean the pursuit of happiness. Can you measure whether you have life, whether you have liberty, and whether you have property? Can you measure that? Absolutely. Can you measure the pursuit of happiness? So in reality, for our lives, it's whether we have life, liberty, and property. Besides, you cannot pursue happiness. It ensues from the things you do. Somebody tell me that. We have the right to pursue happiness, but we have no guarantees. The core of our unalienable rights as a free people is that we have the sacred right of our life, our liberty, and our property. We must have the voluntary use of our property. Our liberty is only as secure as our property rights. Number five, to be free, we must all be created equal in the eyes of our government. We must all have equal opportunities for our successes and for our failures. We must have equal opportunities. However, it is not possible to have freedom at the same time the government tries to compel us to have equal possessions. That is socialism. It will not work. You have equal, you are created equal, all of us. You have the rights equally, but not the same possessions. I'm not sure everybody wants one of these diabetic little things here. I don't see why you would need one. So why should you have one? I'm the one who needs it, right? We don't equally need the same things. Okay. Now number six, out of eight. Freedom is only available if the government is prevented from being abusive. See anybody upset with that? The Constitution was written to limit the power of government. It's a rule book for government. It isn't a rule book for you and me. It's a rule book to limit government. In theory. Unfortunately. But we do know the central part of our ability to be free is the rule of law. What's the difference? The English had common law, which was not written down. So when it wasn't written down, what was it? Whatever you thought it was. Because that probably sounds like these rulings when it says Congress shall make no law, and the court says that really means Congress shall make law. And you go, Anyway, freedom can only be maintained in a society that writes down the laws and protects the rule of law. I'll leave the justice. Number seven. Because of the effect upon all of our society, we only are as free as our markets are free. Boy, our forefathers really understood that. We are only as free as our markets are free. When the markets are held politically, and they are used to the advantage of one political party or one class of people, there is no freedom. One class of people cannot be held hostage and there be freedom or liberty. And finally, number eight, our society cannot be free when one generation's debts are put upon another generation. Our forefathers knew this. Up to 150 years of American liberty knew that. So what did our ancestors do? Our ancestors fought, bled, and died so that the rest of the world could learn from that. Did New Mexico learn from it? From what? From what? It had the chance to learn. We have the chance now to learn. I really like that our forefathers started in freedom. I'm a little concerned that we retreated a little from it. Now, there is a commonality. Did you know in the Revolutionary War, 25% of the people were for revolution, right? The historians among us. And 25% were against revolution. They were Tories. They liked George III. And 50% just wanted to be left alone. Wanted to be left alone. I don't care what you guys do, just leave me alone, right? So in this last couple of elections, 25% are Republicans, 25% are Democrats, and 50% of the American available voting public doesn't even register to vote. Same as that, right? They're just concerned with the here and now, make a living. Try not to let your kids drive you crazy. That's back in 1776 and now. Something to think about. Some place to go. All is not for naught, though. We have more freedoms than 1776, but more than have more freedoms, we understand liberty now. Now, if we choose not to be free, that's our choice. It wasn't 1776 where we didn't know that we didn't need a king. We now know that we shouldn't have kings or people who act like them. I like what Oliver Wendell Holmes wrote in the 19th century. Here's what he said, and I think this applies to all of us and our ancestors. 100 years after we are gone and forgotten, those who never heard of us we'll be living with the results of our actions. I like that. We are the descendants of people who brought freedom to themselves and to the world through their actions. And most people don't know their names. I thank God for them. I thank God for my freedom. And thank you for letting me kind of talk about that. Okay.